Okay, let's bring House Natural Resources Committee to order. Will the secretary please call the roll?
Chair Gunderson?
Here.
Vice Chair Knutson?
Here.
Vice Chair Curdy?
Here.
Representative Ferris Olson?
Here.
Representative Fielder?
Here.
Representative Fitzgerald?
Here.
Representative France?
Here.
Representative Galloway?
Here.
Representative Gist?
Here.
Representative Malone?
Here.
Representative Marler?
Excused.
Representative Noland?
Excused.
Representative Putnam?
Here.
Representative Walsh?
Here.
Representative Weatherwax?
Here.
Mr. Chair, quorum is present.
We do have a quorum. So welcome, everybody. If you wish to give testimony, please sign in at the door, providing your name, affiliation, and where you're from. Please note the information in your testimony is public record. The following bills have been scheduled for hearing today, which will be House Bill 382. And let's see. Oh, everybody make sure you silence your cell phones. If you must take call, please step outside of the committee room. And I will open, if you're ready, Vice Chair Curdy, HB 382.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Willis Curdy, represent House District 98 in Missoula County. The Target Range, Orchard Homes, Fort Missoula, and South Reserve Street areas. I am sponsoring House Bill 382, a bill which would restrict the use, and I want everybody to understand we're going to do two amendments already. The title of the bill says possession. We're going to change that to use. Okay, and we're also going to do some change on rulemaking with our school trust lands. So that will be coming down the pike. Restrict the use of exploding targets on land administered by the Department of Natural Resources and Conservation and Fish, Wildlife, and Parks during periods of high and very high and extreme fire danger as identified by the Department of Natural Resources and Conservation. House Bill 382 would give Montana state land administrators a tool to reduce the occurrence of wildfires. Over the last 10 years, Montana has spent upwards of $16 million to suppress wildfires. And I'm the caveat with the $16 million, I'll come back and mention a little bit. to suppress wildfires identified as ignited by individuals using exploding targets. In suppressing those wildfires, firefighters have been needlessly placed in hazardous situations, and homeowners have been subjected to loss of private property, and people in Montana have lost valuable timber, grazing, and water resources. And for the record, Mr. Chair and members, I served 3 years on a hotshot crew, the Bitterroot Interregional Hotshot Crew, in the late 60s and early 70s, 30 years as a Missoula smoke jumper. Accumulated some 300 plus jumps as a smoke jumper. And I also served as a pilot for the Forest Service. I was an incident commander type 3, managing fires upwards of 1,000 acres, and also a tactical group supervisor. My job was to either fly the individual or be that person, and I coordinated all the air traffic over a fire. So, Mr. Chair, I'll stand by and let folks have their chance to talk, and I reserve the right to finish, close. And by the way, we'll come back and reference two handouts that you people received, that everybody received, and we'll discuss those later. Okay? Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, Representative Curdy. Are there any proponents in the House?
Yeah.
Chairman Gunderson, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Leonard Lundby, L-U-N-D-B-Y. I am the fire chief of the Manchester Volunteer Fire Department. Manchester is a small community just west of Great Falls in Cascade County. And I'm also the immediate past vice chairman of the Montana State Fire Chiefs Association. As you can see, my hair is getting thin and gray. And at least part of that is due to Tannerite. We have had many Tannerite-caused fires in Cascade County in recent years. At least one of them was on school trust lands that grew to about 300 acres. Took us about 5 or 6 hours to put it out. Quite a few trucks, quite a bit of help. Invariably, at the end of those fires, Tannerite-caused fires, my guys asked me, isn't there something we can do about this? And I tell them, no, there's nothing I can do about it. But there's something that the legislature could do about it, if they will. So I want you today to prove to me that you have our backs and that you'll actually do something about this problem. In my humble opinion, this bill doesn't go far enough. I would like to see it more far-reaching than this, but at least this is something. And I can go back and tell my guys that, hopefully, that the legislature did something for us. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lundby. Do we have any more proponents in the House?
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Rocky Infanger, I-N-F-A-N-G-E-R. I'm the fire chief of the Wolf Creek Craig Fire Service Area just north of Helena. Also serve on the board for the Lewis and Clark Rural Fire Council, and I'm also representing the Montana State Fire Chiefs Association. We've had our fair share of exploding target fires, not only here, throughout the state. It just seems like there's more and more of them all the time. One of our biggest things that we always have to worry about is our firefighters and the public. These fires don't care about boundaries nor jurisdictions. Federal lands, these are ban on federal lands. 2019, just north of here, the North Hills fire was started on federal land by exploding targets. That fire moved east and caused over 500 homes to be evacuated. All I could say is that we need to do something to try to stem this problem that seems to be becoming worse and worse. You know, with the feds having theirs banned on their land, if we can do it on state and move on to whatever else we need to move on to. But we have a lot of lives in jeopardy due to these, and we have had over the years, and there's no place. This isn't just Montana. This is across the West, California, Washington, wherever. So I would like to see this bill passed. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Any more proponents in the room?
Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Leo Dutton. I am the fire warden for Lewis and Clark County, and I would urge your support of House Bill 382, please. By way of background, I've been in law enforcement and associated with the partnership of the fire service for approximately 35 years. What I want to describe to you is a process, in case you're wondering how it's determined when it says hazardous weather, the determination process I go through. As fire warden, I represent Lewis and Clark County. Each county has a fire warden, and the Department of Natural Resources and Conservation, or DNRC, sponsors a group call each Tuesday morning at 9 o'clock when conditions become hazardous. And I'm not a fireman, and I don't even play one on TV. Even though there's competition between, I'm also the sheriff, so there's competition between sheriffs and firemen. We get along well, especially in the rural areas. So the process we use is energy release components in 100-hour fuels, the larger logs, 1,000-hour fuels. How dry is a forest? What is the precipitation, the snowtell? What do we have for water? What do we have for resources to fight a fire? If things that, if we have a great mutual aid system, and if something else gets called, we may send them a lot and we may not have a lot. So the ultimate decision in this county is a mutual agreed upon with the fire departments and me. They're the fire experts, and then I vote. And my vote carries the weight from the commission. They have assigned me that authority. It's really the Board of County Commissioners that can open and close burning, but they've gave me that authorization. So when we're talking about opening and closing state lands, it is that call every week where we try to coordinate with our federal partners, our state partners, and our local partners, that if we're going to close one, we ought to consider all of the weather, all of those kind of things, and some of you are familiar with that. But the reason we do that is it allows us to not be citing someone, giving them a ticket for burning when maybe 100 yards away they are having a campfire and they're on a different ownership or responsibility of the land. It could be federal. So if we all talk at once, or not at once, but we all hear at once, share ideas, share the science, and then have that agreement how we're going to either close burning down or not. And it's the DNRC that leads that. They schedule the meetings. They help us with that. And it happens every week. So there's probably something that I should have said that I didn't, but I'll be around for questionings. And I'm glad we didn't have to get up and talk about our hairdo each with each one. So I appreciate that. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Dutton. Are there any more proponents in the room? Any more proponents in the room? Rachel, do we have any proponents online?
Mr. Chair, we do have one proponent online.
Oh, Catherine, sorry about that. If we could have them up on deck.
Hello, Chairman Gunnarsson and members of the committee. My name is Carmen Borchelt, B-O-R-C-H-E-L-T, here on behalf of Montana Audubon, and we would like to be on the record for support for House Bill 382. During the last few years, we have supported the efforts of the sponsor to help proactively reduce the threat of exploding targets on state-managed lands. We believe this restrictive proposal to administratively tip the balance between recreation values and potential risk of exploding targets when dangerous fire conditions exist makes sense. It's simple to enact and enforce, and we can have much needed management or save much needed management funding. It gives the board the ability and flexibility to manage an important classification of land with the annual variation in fire risk. And for these simple reasons, we urge for a due pass on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Borchelt. Do we have any more online proponents, Catherine?
Mr. Chair, that is all we have online for proponents.
Okay. Moving along, do we have any opponents in the room? Any opponents? Seeing none, do we have any online, Catherine?
We do not, Mr. Chair.
Okay, moving along from there, do we have any informational witnesses in the room? Seeing none, do we have any online?
Yes, Mr. Chair. We do have two, and one is signed up and one is not. Would you like me to allow both of them to speak or just the one who is signed up?
Let's hear the one that signed up, and if you could text me or on Teams, I guess, let me know who the other one is.
Mr. Chairman, sorry, members of the committee. The other one is Sonia Gurman from DNRC, and she was the one that tried to sign up yesterday, and the page didn't work for her.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. That's correct. We were contacted by Sonia. So if we could have the first one, and we'll go from there.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Corey Kalnan. That's C-A-L-N-A-N. And I'm the County Co-op Fire Program Manager for the DNRC Forestry Division Fire Protection Bureau. Here is an informational witness and available for questions about DNRC and wildland fire protection. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Kalnan. And I guess, Sonia, you're up.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Good to see everybody today again. For the record, my name is Sonia Gurman, S-O-N-Y-A-G-E-R-M-A-N-N, and I'm the Division Administrator for Forestry Division with DNRC. And like Corey, I'm available to answer any questions about DNRC fire protection and wildland fire protection in general. And I just want to mention that Corey, as our County Co-op Program Manager, he has years of experience of on-the-ground wildfire protection and engaging with multiple partners on these issues. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Sonia. Do we have any questions from the panel? Representative Malone, you're up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the Honorable Sheriff Dutton.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Representative Malone, thank you for calling me honorable.
You are honorable.
I'm going to tell my wife you said that.
Mr. Chair, Sheriff, long ago, and I haven't been in government for over 40 years, longer, not as long as you have, but have you ever figured out how to correct stupidity in people?
Mr. Chairman, may I be excused?
Yeah, yeah.
No, keep sir, I haven't.
Keep it on the bill, Representative.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. Apologize. Do you think this may be better, Mr. Chair, Mr. Sheriff, do you think this is better if we modified the open burning laws that every county has?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Malone, what this allows us to do is a proactive stance in that when we say burning is closed, we have a good system to get that out. You can't open your burning permit. We still have people that do, but it gives us teeth then to cite. Right now, if you start a fire on state lands with an exploding target and it burns homes, all of those kind of things, the civil lawsuits can come. But criminally, we can't do anything about it because it was not illegal. So when your opening statement is what keeps me in business, but the issue is what can we do to stop that? And I know it's education and it should be common sense that you don't shoot an exploding target when there's a red flag warning out or there is those things. But this does help us in that we can have some teeth with it. Right now, there's nothing we can do. Homeowners have to go through civil lawsuits to get their recompense for their losses.
So follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
So the counties all can, Mr. Chair, the sheriff, the counties can all have, you can't have open burning because of dangerous, and there's certainly laws for that, I guess. And that would cover all property, not just state lands.
It does not cover private property. Or, Mr. Chair, Representative Malone, we don't cover private property because the law doesn't allow for the closing. If a fire chief, there is a fire chief in the room that's going to come back up and help me if you let him, about closing, burning. We can't close it on forested area. That's where we have our partnership with the DNRC. We can close it on areas that, we can't do it on private land, that are open, that aren't forested. We can close it there. But if you shoot a Tannerite target, which we had in 2019 here, that caused the evacuation that the fire chief talked about, that was my gig, that because it was on federal land, we could pursue criminal charges. It wasn't intentional. It was an accident. But it's quite an educational campaign to get out in front of it and say, please, please, please don't shoot exploding targets when conditions are dry.
Thank you. Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Sheriff Dutton. I have a question from the Honorable Representative Fitzgerald.
Mr. Chair, it's my pleasure to be here and alive again. A question is, I guess I know what they're talking about in terms of this Tannerite, but my question is to whoever might answer it is, what's the access to that particular compound, and is it restricted in terms of having a permit or being registered to buy it? And is there liability been exerted after the fact on these incidents, Mr. Chair?
Do we have any takers? Thank you, Sheriff Dutton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fitzgerald, hope you're getting to feel good. No, there is no restrictions on buying Tannerite.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
Sheriff Dutton, I'm a little ignorant on this, but what's the source? What vendors handle that, and do they have to sign for it and such, or is it just an open market thing you can get down to your local sporting goods store, Mr. Chair?
Mr. Chair, Representative Fitzgerald, you're correct. It's sold at sporting goods stores, and I don't believe you have to sign for it. It's not registered. It's something that you can go in and buy. If there is a good area that you're shooting it, a lot of people use it for telling what kind of a baby they're having, but we're talking about shooting it in a forested, dry area. There is no registration for it. You can just walk in the sporting goods store. Mr. Chair, Representative Fitzgerald.
One last follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Follow-up.
And this is an open question as well. Again, like most fires that have started negligently, how many of these past exploding target fires have been taken to task for liability, Mr. Chair?
Representative Fitzgerald, is that for the sheriff?
That would be fine, Mr. Dutton.
Sheriff?
Chairman Gunderson and Representative Fitzgerald, I know of one that we did pursue charges, or the federal government pursued charges, and that was in 2019. We've had several others that I can tell you we weren't able to prove or to have a good case to give to the county attorney that our suspect was the one who used the Tannerite. The investigation or the fire investigation team did show that the propagation of the fire where it started, where the grass laid over, was more than likely Tannerite, because anything else doesn't explode like that. But I'm not aware of where we've been able to charge, but I know that we have a fire chief, a couple of them here in the room. If you would, sir, Mr. Chairman, Representative Fitzgerald.
Deferred.
That'd be fine. Mr. Lundby.
Chairman Gunderson, Representative Fitzgerald, Leonard Lundby here. The problem with pursuing these charges is when they start a fire with these things, they don't stick around. They pack up and get out of there in a hurry, and we can't find them. We'd love to press charges. If we couldn't press charges, at least our firefighters would like to get a hold of them for about 5 minutes behind a fire truck. But we can't. You can't find them. They go and. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Chief Lundy. Mr. Chairman, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lundy. Many more questions. Representative Galloway.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This would be for the sponsor.
for the sponsor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Galloway.
Mr. Chair, Representative Curdy. In your opening, you'd said you're already amending, and I just wanted to verify. So in the title, it's you're going to strike possession, put in use, but then what about the rest of the way through? Is that going to follow suit all the way through? Okay, that makes sense. Thank you.
Representative, excuse me. Representative Fielder.
Mr. Chair, I've got a question for the sponsor, please.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fielder.
Mr. Chair, Representative Curdy. You say you're going to bring an amendment to change the possessions in this bill to uses, correct?
Yeah.
Because I see five places where we need to do that.
That's correct.
Okay. Do you know, Mr. Chair,
follow up?
Mr. Chair, Representative Curry, when will that amendment be coming, do you think?
I'm working with Mr. Coleman, and I'm also going to have another discussion with Sonia German about the one rulemaking provision that deals with our school trust lands. So it'll be in the next, I would imagine, by our next committee meeting.
Thank you.
And Representative Gist.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for Sheriff Dutton.
Sheriff Dutton.
Mr. Chairman, sorry, I was sitting at the back of the room. Who was
Representative Gist.
Oh, right here.
Good to see you again, Sheriff.
You, sir.
So I have a question for you. On the Northwest Land Office, Southwest Land Office, Southern Land Office, and Northeast Land Office, some of these say yes. How many times have they caught up with the individual that actually started the fire? It's kind of a two-part question. And because you weren't able to charge them, what happened to them if they were caught?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gist, what we generally have is a fire that started, and as you know, you don't see it till you get a big enough plume of smoke that somebody thinks that that's an issue. In the 2019 fire, those people stayed around, and they called in. They tried to put it out. Generally, they don't. Generally, they take off. We do work with DNRC, and we do work with U.S. Forest Service. The people with the expertise or fire investigation or a combination team here in Helena called High Fit Helena Investigation or Fire Investigation Team. And we go out, when I say we, them, go out and do the investigation to see what we have, was it intentional, and what's the evidence. When you find a tannerite or you find what you suspect is a tannerite, there's sometimes cans or some remaining evidence. Fingerprints don't stay on the hot can. So what we can find is generally not great. So we work with witnesses who's been in the area. That's what makes it tough to prosecute, is finding witnesses to say, I saw that vehicle there at approximately this time. Unless you have somebody that videoed it, we're stuck with maybe circumstantial evidence where somebody will say, well, I think I saw a blue truck, what you're looking for. And that gives us a clue, but we don't often find them that start it. But we do work it.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
So then, if they make it illegal, do we stand any better chance of catching individuals? I guess my question would be.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gist, good question. Still the same problems exist. But what it does allow for us to advertise, if you're going to shoot exploding targets on days that we've closed at to the weather, I think it helps with education. And if we can prove it, it will help with the criminal part of it. But you're right, still the same circumstances exist. All of those still remain the same, but it will help us with education. Maybe, God willing, that somebody would say, oh, I didn't understand that it was illegal to do that then. But, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, one more quick follow-up. And I mean, I like the concept, but I also wonder if they know that they're going to a fine. If I saw a number 1500, I don't know if that referred to what this would be, but do you think that would, you know, we're in trouble, let's get out of here, versus the one in 2019 that stuck around to call and make call for help? I understand education is key in anything. I'm just wondering, could we have a negative consequence, is my question there.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gist, and with all due respect, I don't think it could get any worse. I think what it allows us to do is what I've already stated. I can't disagree with you that the same parameters that we've investigated before are still the same. All those are still the same. Now it's just, it's something that we can educate the public. It is illegal. We can say it's not a good idea. Don't do it. Please don't do it. But now it's illegal. That's what I can do, sir. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Galloway.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This would be for Sheriff Dutton, please.
Sheriff Dutton.
Chairman Gunderson, Representative Galloway.
Mr. Chairman, Sheriff Dutton, I'm not sure if your county's the same as ours, but I live in the country and I have to get a burn permit.
Yes, sir.
And I can easily get online and let them know that I'm going to burn that day. I'm required to, and the fines are pretty substantial if I don't. Why, or I guess my question would be is, why couldn't we require a permit, online permit, to be out shooting these targets? So that you know who's doing it and when, and you know, your clearance. I think ours, if it says no burn, I mean, you better not burn. Thoughts?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Galloway, that's entirely up to you. I don't know. It might be somewhat abrasive to the shooting sports people that don't want to have to register to go shoot. I could imagine that would bring out some people that said they shouldn't have to. That would be where I could see a problem. It's one of those things, I can't really answer that truthfully, 100%. We still have people that burn without a permit, and it's fire chief's decision if they want them cited or not. They often opt to education. Same with this. I don't know that it would change any of the facts that Representative Gist talked about. Does it change those kind of things? We wanted to deter that bad behavior. I'm not sure that that would work or not, but that would be a discussion that you all may have.
Thank you.
Yep. Thank you, Chair.
Do we have any more questions from the panel? Representative Malone.
Mr. Chair, for the sponsor.
Sponsor?
Mr. Chair, Representative Malone.
Mr. Chair, Representative Curdy, do you, as I read this thing, maybe I'm reading it incorrectly, there are three boards that are going to make rulemaking authority on this subject.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Representative Malone, so if you take a look at 23.1.111, and Mr. Coleman, correct me. The board in this case represents the board of state parks and recreation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And when we go to 77.1-804, that is the Fish and Game Commission.
Okay.
And they do reference the department in there, and the department is the Department of Natural Resources and Conservation.
So, Mr. Chair, Mr. Curdy, that is three boards making rules. Your state lands.
That's why we need to go back and work on the rules. That's why that's going to be a part of the amendment, is to work out. There's some questions coming from the school trust lands folks. And about Can, in fact, the Fish and Game Commission, if I got this right, Fish and Game Commission and the Parks and Recreation Board institute rules for school trust lands. So that's what we have to work out here. And Mr. Chair and Representative Malone, that question came up after the bill was written, and the Department of Natural Resources and Conservation reviewed it and came back to me saying that there's some question here we have to work through. So that's why we're going to do the amendment to cover this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Coleman, you have a comment? You're muted.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the reason there are three boards in there is those lands are each managed by three different entities. So the Parks and Recreation Board manages state parks. The Trust Lands Division manages, from DNRC manages those trust lands, and then the Fish and Wildlife Commission manages places such as wildlife management areas. So it's just different types of state land that are managed by different jurisdictions. And so that's why those three entities are in there, because they have different jurisdictions, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. Are there any other questions from the panel? Representative Knutson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My first question would probably be for Sheriff Dutton, if that's possible, please.
Mr. Chair, man, I'm having a hard time reading on the screen. Oh, right there. Vice Chair Knutson.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Sheriff Dutton. How often does a fire start on private land and spread to DNRC?
Mr. Chairman, Vice Chair Knutson, quite often.
Follow-up.
Would
you have any numbers on Tannerite fires that may have started on a private property and moved to DNRC or state land, Mr. Dutton?
The only thing I have to draw from was 35 years of experience in the business. I don't have hard data where I can pull up reports, so if you will allow for that, I can give you a guess. But I don't have the hard data with me. I would guess the Tannerite fire. Tannerite hasn't been around that long, but it has caused probably, it doesn't seem like much, but what I can recall in my head is 8 to 10 fires locally.
One more follow-up, please.
Follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Sheriff Dutton, one more question. How many fires per year do you know, or give me an estimate, of other types of fires not started by Tannerite that start on private lands and move to the DNRC lands, state lands? Sheriff.
Mr. Chairman and Vice Chair Knutson, the fires that start on private land generally are debris burning. We have occasionally arsonists. If you go back 4 to 5 years, we had an arsonist, and other particular parts of the state had the same thing, starting fires. That's one. Two, debris burning when they're not supposed to in high winds, or started before the high winds got there and they spread to state lands. Oftentimes, these debris burning areas are kind of in the WUI, the there we go. Okay, he got it. Wildland Urban Interface. Those homes are generally in that area that start on private land and move into state land or fish and game areas or the other one. But there is a transition there, even out into Fire Chief Infanger's area, and substantial. That's he has a lot of forest and DNRC protection.
Thank you.
Any more questions from the panel?
I have another one.
I've got one, and then I'll give back to Vice Chair Knutson. And this would be for the sponsor, Vice Chair Curdy.
Mr. Chair.
Vice Chair Curdy, when you buy tannerite, is there any kind of hazardous material charge to get it shipped to you? You know?
Not that I know.
Yeah, because I couldn't find anything by just trying to purchase it online. And it seems kind of odd if it's that.
Yeah. Mr. Chair and members, one of the other ways in which they come up with this material, that besides just buying the straight tannerite, is combining other chemicals like aluminum nitrate and other things that are also mixed. And when somebody shoots that mixture, they will explode. That's another portion of this exploding target or exploding material that's used.
Could you point out where that's in the bill?
Well, Mr. Chair and members, if you take a look at my little chart that I gave you, it says research synopsis. It describes some of that at the bottom of the page.
Okay, I guess a question would be, when it says when targets are placed directly on a straw bale, are we in the process going to ban the use of straw bales?
No, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this was a test. This research analysis or synopsis. As you take a look at this, you'll see the test characteristics in the left-hand column. In the center column, you'll see where the test was done in 2015, doing the same type of test, and the parameters that the temperature was like at 31 to 46 degrees. The RH, or the relative humidity, was, you know, 64 to 99% is obviously quite high. So you're looking at a low to maybe a moderate fire danger, probably low. And then they did studies in Yakima, Washington, and you can see that the temperature is quite higher, and the RH was down to 14 to 23%. So that's pretty dry. So basically what they're trying to do here is to show, you know, what type of currents would happen under those environmental conditions.
Okay, thank you. Representative Knutson, do you have another question?
Hey, a couple, if I could, for the sponsor, please, Mr. Chair.
The sponsor?
Mr. Chair, Madam Vice Chair.
Representative Curdy, I'm looking at the charts that you gave us with the different numbers of fires. Yep. And as I look through them, I see a relative small number per year in each area. One fire from Tannerite in 2018. One of the charts says three in 2019, but most of the other ones just have one or two fires per year. How many, if you know, Representative Curdy, how many other fires occur on the state lands that are probably caused by other legal activities that started that fire, Representative?
Mr. Chair, or Madam Vice Chair, so you're asking what other fires started by legal activities?
Correct. And let me give you a couple of examples, Mr. Chair. What about campfires, camping, with or without a fire, a camper? One that comes to mind is on agricultural lands or state lands that are used for agricultural purposes, welding, and maybe even just driving, Mr. Curdy. Representative Curdy.
Mr. Chair, Madam Vice Chair, could I defer to Ms. Gurman, because she's the one who probably would have most or close access to those figures.
Sure.
Sonia Gurman.
Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Knutson, I do not have those numbers on hand, but we can certainly put together a query of human-caused fires and see what we can drill down to, if if that would be helpful, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Sonia, that would be great. If you could send those to our clerk, that would be super. But I think Representative Knutson had another question or concern.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Gurman, yes, that would be great. But my question, Mr. Chair, is for Representative Curdy, if that's possible. One last question.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Madam Vice Chair.
Representative Curdy, is there a fiscal note for this?
At this point, there is not.
Thank you.
Any more questions? Representative France.
Representative Curdy, Mr. Chair, I'd like to direct a question to the sponsor.
Sponsor?
Mr. Chair, Representative France.
I'll observe. I really didn't know this was a problem before this hearing, and I appreciate being informed about it. I appreciate that trying to regulate certain lands might make sense, but at another point in the session, we debated a bill about fireworks and what types of fireworks should be allowed. And as I recall, I think we allowed some new fireworks to be sold in the state. And I'm wondering if these exploding targets aren't akin to a firework and whether we shouldn't think about that as an approach.
Mr. Chair, Representative France. So as the good fire chief from Manchester mentioned, this is the first little stab at providing some type of restriction on the use of certain types of explosives on state lands. Okay, up to this point, there's nothing concerning fireworks and the use of fireworks on state lands. And we know that we've had examples of fires on state lands because of it. But again, we're making small steps here. I could go for the whole thing, but I'm really conservative about how we approach this because we need to be sure that we can do what we want to do here. So maybe the fireworks is for another session or several sessions down the way.
Thank you, Representative Curdy.
Thank you, Representative France. Representative Gist.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for the sponsor.
Sponsor.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gist.
Actually, not so much a question, but perhaps a suggestion if we're putting an amendment on here that an individual goes out in the morning, you know, and your RH is high, there's not a lot of fire danger, and by 2 o'clock in the afternoon, as you've done fires a lot, then the red flag warning gets kicked in. Are the people going to have to be checking their phones to make sure that there's not a red flag warning during this time?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gist, so when, the good Sheriff Dutton mentioned a few minutes ago, he talked about the energy release components of the ERCs, okay? When the ERCs get to a certain point, I think you probably have some fire experience, okay? So when they get to a certain point, then it kicks into the next level. So that level, as far as most fire protection groups do, and I would imagine in Lewis and Clark County, so that once it jumps into high fire danger, then no matter whether it's in the morning or the afternoon, it's still considered to be high fire danger. I'm not expecting somebody to go in their computer and check out the Haynes Index or check out the ERCs. That gets way too wonky for folks. But, you know, the local fire agencies do a great job of signage. Anytime you go into state lands or whatever, there's that little board there with the arrow saying, okay, now we're in high fire danger or very high or extreme fire danger. That is the parameters that those folks should know when they go into our state lands. And you know, if it falls in an area, that's their responsibility to know what it is. Okay. Somebody made a comment about eliminating stupidity. Okay. You know, it's time for folks to figure out, you know, is this something I can do or cannot do? because of the conditions.
Yeah. Follow-up?
Follow-up.
Perhaps in the educational piece is where I'm going with this. In the educational piece, as Sheriff Dutton had mentioned, perhaps we can put in that educational piece that if you are going to go out and you are going to shoot these, please check before you shoot what the conditions are. It's kind of more of a suggestion than a question. Thank you, Representative.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Gist, thanks.
Well, if nobody else wants to take a shot, would you like to close on your bill?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. So I do have to make one clarification, and I want to make it to make sure that we get our numbers right. I said at the outset that we have, in the last 10 years, spent up to $16 million. So if you go on your list, on your chart, on the one side where it says the CLO or the Central Lands Office, down three items there is the Stuckey Road fire in 2019. You can see the acreage burned there was 16,000 acres, and the cost is unknown. Well, the cost of the fire was some $8.7 million. Now, that said, figuring out the cost of these fires sometimes takes years in negotiations between maybe the state of Montana, the Forest Service, the Federal Emergency Management Administration, and the like. So there is that possibility that there may be somewhere between zero and $8.7 million added to this figure at that point. So I want to make sure everybody understood that, because I want to make sure that we have accurate information. So, Mr. Chair, Madam Vice Chair, members of the committee, thank you for a great hearing, great questions. I want to emphasize that House Bill 382 is narrow in its scope by restricting the use of exploding targets during that high, very high, and extreme fire danger. This bill does not, and I repeat, does not prohibit the use of these devices on private land. This bill should not be construed as being judgmental on their use by private citizens on private land. This bill is not intended to deny a citizen's right to keep and bear arms. It is simply a proposal to protect Montana's wood and fiber resources, grazing land, outdoor recreation opportunities, our firefighters, Montana taxpayers, and the private land owners who border public land. And Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I would ask for a due pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Curdy. And that brings HB 382 to a close. Committee members, we're probably going to take a break here and talk about HB 320 and should have pulled this out before SB 53. Vice Chair Curdy. Vice Chair Curdy, are you ready to do EA on 320 and SB 350?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay. I think what we'll do is we had a request to put a to take off the table HB 152 and put an amendment on it, and we'll probably do EA on that. Is that going to work?
Today? Sure.
Okay. Representative Knutson, would you like to make a motion?
Which one do you want to start with?
Let's do 152 and get that on board here.
Mr. Chair, I move to take House Bill 152 from the table, please.
And I guess we'll just take a voice vote if everybody would like to vote on that. And to bring it off the table, there are no proxies. So it's going to be everybody present on Zoom and in the room. So all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Are there any nays?
Nay.
One nay. Okay. And that was... Oh, two nays.
Representative Fielder and myself. Fielder. Nay.
It was Fielder and...
Okay, so two. So I guess we need to move the bill and then add the amendment.
Mr. Chair, I vote House Bill 152 do pass.
All those in favor of House Bill 152 say aye.
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 We need to do discussion.
Chair, we need to do the amendment, don't we?
That's what we're doing.
Oh,
okay. We had to open it.
Okay, I need to give an amendment number. Let me grab that from you.
Discussion.
It'd be amendment number HB152.1.1.
Mr. Chair, I move amendment HB152.1.1.
All those are, is there any discussion?
What is the amendment?
Representative Fielder.
Do you want to have her talk about the amendment?
Yeah.
Or Joe?
Mr. Chair, I think that as I read this amendment, if the person is stopped because he has not taken the drain plug out of his boat, this amendment says that he can correct the violation in the presence of the officer by taking the drain plug out of the boat and then proceeding down the road with the drain plug out. And that still goes against what I want to do with my boats, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Coleman, would you like to make comment and explain that?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Representative Fielder, you're looking at the amendment on page 4, subsection 2, is that correct? Are you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Fielder, you're looking at a peace officer may not require a driver who may be in violation of the requirements to travel with a disengaged drain plug to stop, except on reasonable cause to believe. Is that where you're looking?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Coleman, yes, that's where I'm looking. This amendment that I'm reading here that was given to us says that a driver found to be in violation may correct a violation in the presence of the officer and be deemed in compliance. But to correct the violation, he's got to take out the drain plug and leave it out before he travels down the road. That's the way I read this amendment, Mr. Chair.
I believe Mr. Coleman is deliberating.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I guess I don't think that it says you would have to keep the drain plug out. I think you could construe that to say they could unscrew it, put it back in. But I see your point. And I guess I can't say either way on that if it would have to stay out. I mean, it does say, I think what it's trying to say is if you're going down the road, the officer stops you for some violation, the drain plug is in, as long as you're not impacting state waters, so you're not taking the plug out where it's going to drain into state waters, you could unplug it and then possibly put it back in, I would guess.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Coleman, on page 2 of the original bill, on page 14, it says the drain plug left disengaged or leaving. So the way I'm reading it, the drain plug has to be left disengaged.
But he doesn't want to leave it disengaged. That's the whole point.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Fielder, that is correct.
Mr. Coleman, I guess I'd have to agree with you. It's the way I'm reading it is if you're found in violation, it's in, you've been pulled over. To correct it, you can take it out in the presence of an officer and you're deemed in compliance. A correction made in this subsection 2B must be done in a way not to impact any state water. So it doesn't really have to say you have to leave it out. That's the way I'm reading it. Am I correct?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I think so. I mean, I think what it's saying in sub 2 there on the end of page 4, a peace officer may not require a driver who may be in violation to travel with a disengaged drain plug to stop except on reasonable cause to believe they violated a traffic regulation. I think the partially ambiguous part that Representative Fielder is getting at is you can't be stopped unless there's another reason if your drain plug is in. But once you've corrected it, does that mean your drain plug is out and you're free to go as long as your drain plug is out?
Yeah, I see that. I'd have to agree. So in essence, the correction is actually leaving the plug out.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I think it could be read that way.
Mr. Coleman, do we want to further clarify this, or do you think we can? Any suggestions? I guess I'm kind of at a loss.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I guess I would say if you want to. You want to just leave the bill off the table and maybe rescind the motion, we can work on another amendment for Wednesday. That might be I'm not confident we can hammer one out conceptually right now.
Yeah, I think it'd be a little difficult to hammer out at this point. But I see where Representative Fielder is making a good valid point that this amendment doesn't solve that plug out problem.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Putnam does have his hand up.
Yep. Representative Putnam.
Mr. Chairman, committee, thanks. I guess my question on this, as it's changed, my understanding was we were going to do an amendment that essentially said if you're east of the divide, this rule does not apply, and if you're west of the divide, it applies. something to get Walleyes Unlimited on board with it. I don't think this amendment does that. I think you'd still have the guys over on the east side upset about this. Can we get an amendment that kind of throws the continental divide in there and says east or west of it and clarifies it where it has to be out?
I would probably suggest that we vote on this amendment, and if it doesn't pass, let's leave the bill on the table, and we'll ask Representative Durham if he wants to find another approach on this. So I guess where are we at? Do we need to continue with the amendment, Mr. Coleman?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, if you don't want to consider the amendment, the vice chair could just rescind the motion.
Yeah, let's go ahead and do that then, Vice Chair Knutson.
Mr. Chair, I rescind my past motion for the do pass for amendment. As soon as I find the number. House Bill 152. .1.1. I want to rescind the motion.
Without objection. Okay. So let's. Should we do a substitute motion and table this bill? How about if we take a few minutes? What do you think, Representative Curdy? 10, 15 minutes?
Mr. Chair, let's do 15.
15? Okay, so we'll just adjourn for about 15 minutes. Representative France?
I think I might have missed the discussion on this bill. I'm not sure. I'm just wondering if I could ask Representative Fielder to just clarify his concerns so I'm sure what we're trying to address in the amendment we're going to work on. Would that be in order, Mr. Chair?
We're representing France. It's not going to be up to us. It's going to be up to Representative Durham. And I, what I'll do is I'll put Representative Durham and Representative Fielder in the same room.
Lock the door?
Well, I won't lock the door, but I will allow coffee breaks.
Okay,
but we'll see if they can work something out that's amenable and then bring it back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair,
let's just stand at ease for a few minutes.
We do have a hand up. Ferris Olson.
Yeah, Representative Rob Ferris Olson.
Ferris Olson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to make sure that since we've opened the executive action on HB 152 and we've pulled it off the table, I think it would be appropriate to pass consideration today so that we don't just leave it hanging out there. So I don't know if you want to do that now or when we come back, but just so we don't leave it hanging out there.
Representative Ferris Olson, I think we'll just pass on it today and just leave it hanging.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I guess my question then is for Mr. Coleman. Mr. Coleman, do we need to officially move to pass consideration for today, or can we just leave it?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ferris Olson, no, you can just leave it. I mean, it's off the table. I mean, eventually the committee will have to finally dispose of it either by passing it or tabling it, but it's fine for right now.
Thanks, Mr. Coleman.
Thank you, Representative Ferris Olson. So we'll adjourn for 15 minutes. We'll be back. Let's get back at 4:30. It'll give us 20 minutes. If we get back sooner, we'll do it. Okay. Yeah, well, and it's, once we... Okay, if we got everybody back, we're going to reopen House Natural Resources. Vice Chair Knutson.
Mr. Chair, I move to rescind the motion to do pass on House Bill 152.
And without objection. Okay. So let's open 320.
Mr. Chair, I move to do pass on House Bill 320.
Is there any discussion on House Bill 320?
Representative Marler has her hand up.
Oh, Representative Marler, I didn't see your hand there. And you're muted.
Ha-ha.
There we go.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm going to vote no on House Bill 320. This is a prelude to transfer of federal lands to the states, and the fact that it's saying that the land then can't be sold after it's in state ownership doesn't address a lot of the concerns of people who are advocating for hunting, hiking, public lands, recreation, because there's a lot of state lands that remain in state ownership, but then they're leased for private purposes, and that takes them out of their land use category. So, and I think if there's conversations to be had about changing land, who holds which land, which, you know, under certain circumstances might make sense, I don't think a bill like this is the right way to do it. Thank you for considering my perspective.
Thank you, Representative Marler. Anybody else like to make comment? Representative Fielder.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to support this bill wholeheartedly because I look back at our State Enabling Act. Section 2 of the State Enabling Act says the people inhabiting the said proposed states, which was Montana, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Washington, which all came in under the same Enabling Act, people inhabiting said proposed states do agree and declare that they forever disclaim all right and title to the unappropriated public lands lying within the boundaries thereof, and that until the title thereto shall have been extinguished by the United States, the same shall be subject to the disposition of the United States. So that means that the United States can dispose of the unappropriated lands in the state of Montana. So it's not a matter of the state wanting to sell the public lands, but the United States can dispose of those lands. They can either transfer the lands to the state of Montana, or they can sell off the lands like they've done in other states with similar enabling acts, such as Iowa, Oklahoma, Kansas, Florida, Louisiana, Iowa, Michigan, the other states that came in under their enabling acts. So I'd be much more worried about the federal government disposing of the lands, the public lands in the state of Montana, than I would the state of Montana disposing of the public lands. And basically this bill, 320, says that any lands that are transferred to the state by the federal government cannot be sold. So I support this bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Fielder. Any other comments or input? The question's been called. Do you want to call the bill?
House Bill 320, a bill for an act entitled An Act Prohibiting Future Sales of Land Granted or Transferred to the State, amending Section 77-2-302 MCA and providing an immediate effective date, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Knutson. Let's have the clerk take a voice, or excuse me, a roll call vote.
Vice Chair Knutson?
Yes.
Vice Chair Curdy?
No.
Representative Noland?
Yes.
Representative Malone?
Yes.
Representative Ferris Olson?
No.
Representative Fielder?
Yes.
Representative Gist?
Yes.
Representative Galloway?
Yes.
Representative Marler?
No.
Representative Putnam?
No.
Representative France?
No.
Representative Fitzgerald?
Yes.
Representative Weatherwax?
No.
Representative Walsh?
Yes.
Chair Gunderson?
Yes.
Nine yes, six no.
HB 320 passes and will go to the floor. Next, we'll open SB 53.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 53 do pass.
Is there any discussion on SB 53? No takers. Representative Walsh.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I think this is a good bill for simply adjust regulations down to the size of the operation. It makes the DQ or the DNRC much more easier to regulate, and I think this for the consumer is covers all the necessary environmental regulations, but makes it much easier to start up an operation and operate an operation. And so I think there's enough safeguards in there that protects all the environment. So I'd be a yes for this.
Thank you, Representative Walsh. Representative Galloway.
Thank you, Chair. I, too, would stand for this bill. I think that it has enough safeguards in it to make our state a little more progressive for some minor business activities on a smaller scale, and also freeing up some of the people that probably get buried in paperwork can be dealing with some bigger and better issues. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Galloway. Any other comments? Representative Malone?
Mr. Chair, in reviewing the permits out there, there are two for Park County. Both of them just dig up surface rock. None of the rock is below 3 feet, but I noticed they both have to have a extensive permit. I'm supporting the bill.
Thank you, Representative Malone. Any other takers?
Question.
Well, I was going to make one comment, and I'll put that one on hold. Good Representative Fitzgerald. Most of these operations are just ma and pa type lunchbox operations. So as Representative Malone pointed out, they're usually very, very low surface type mining. And you can't even call it mining. It's more of a gravel pit type operation. And as Representative Walsh put it, we don't need to do a full NEPA environmental impact, all of the crazy things we need to do in hard rock mining. So I definitely am going to support this bill. So the question's been called. Would you do a roll call vote, Jacqueline?
Vice Chair Knutson?
Yes.
Vice Chair Curdy?
No.
Representative Noland?
Yes.
Representative Malone?
Yes.
Representative Ferris Olson?
No.
Representative Fielder?
Yes.
Representative Gist?
Yes.
Representative Galloway?
Yes.
Representative Marler?
No.
Representative Putnam?
Yes.
Representative France?
No.
Representative Fitzgerald?
Yes.
Representative Weatherwax?
No.
Representative Walsh?
Yes.
Chair Gunderson?
Yes.
10 yes, 5 no.
And SB 53 is passed and going to move to the House floor. We'll close that. So is there anything else for the good of the order for House Natural Resources? SB 53 will be carried by Representative Walsh. You got the packet and everything there?
I think so.
Okay. Okay, so we've got that taken care of. Representative Walsh?
Yes, Chairman and members of the committee. I've been requested by the chairman of the Noxious Weed, Montana Noxious Weed Association, and they have in the past had a week governor's proclamation, and we, Representative Marler and myself have agreed to try to get a resolution for the governor to declare that the first week in June, and it would have to be a committee bill, so I would want to know what the thoughts of the committee are. And the idea would be just to create the conversation about how important control and understanding education of noxious weeds.
Any comment from anybody? Representative Curdy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Walsh, I wholeheartedly agree. I think that is really important. And I thank you for helping to work with Representative Marler to make this happen.
Thank you, Representative Curdy. Representative Knutson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In light of several of the other trainings that we've had in this committee, I'm wondering if it wouldn't be beneficial if we didn't have somebody from the DNRC come in and talk to us about the Noxious Weed Trust Fund and how money goes into it and how the money goes out and what it's used for, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Coleman, what do you think? Are we going to have enough time, or are we going to get slammed here with bills? Looking into your crystal ball.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, you are pushing up against transmittal. I mean, you don't really have anything right now, but there are a number of bills in the pipeline. Whether they get out, I mean, we could probably have somebody at least give a primer on it. I can assemble some information and put it on Teams for you if that's something the committee would like, but I can certainly look into it over the next couple of days.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. How about if we kind of keep an eye on that, and if it looks like we aren't too heavily bogged down after transmittal, maybe we can sneak it in then as well.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Malone.
That would be Department of Ag as the lead.
Yeah, correct. Department of Ag would be the lead. Any other comments or? Representative Marler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the other representatives who voiced some support for this. I wanted to give a little bit more detail. In past years, but not every year, the governor has made a governor proclamation about Noxious Weed Awareness Week, and I know that any governor could do that, and I think that the Montana Weed Control Association was really, which many of us have served on the board of, I think that they're hoping that the legislature can make it a standing thing through legislative action, so it doesn't depend on the governor having to do a proclamation every time, and it would have to be a committee bill. So just a little bit extra background, and I sent a message to several people through Teams. Thank you for considering.
Thank you, Representative Marler. And do we have a bill draft request that we can fit that into?
Mr. Chair, Representative Walsh and I tried to do that, but that has to come from you as the chair. And I think we just need a majority of the committee, or I could double check. Mr. Coleman might know, but there's a threshold of votes of members of the committee to get the bill request going, and I would happy to be a point person on it, or I'm sure Representative Walsh or somebody could be a point person on it too.
Thank you, Representative Joe. Do we need to do anything with that right now, or How do we want to take care of that?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. I was putting out a couple other fires there. The request for the committee bill would be on a committee bill for what?
The noxious weed resolution.
Committee bills do take a vote of the committee, both to request and to introduce. If it's a simple resolution, that deadline is your regular transmittal deadline, unless the request is something else. So if you wanted to get that going, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I guess I would suggest doing that today, at least requesting it.
Representative Marler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I brought up the email exchange that some of us had with Susan Fox, and she said, if the committee votes for the bill draft, then the chair can direct staff to get it entered into the system, and it requires 3/4 of a vote of the committee to request the drafting and introduction of the bill. And I think that the language would be very simple.
Thank you, Representative Marler. Having heard that, I would propose that we take a vote to write that resolution and get that started and get going. So all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any nays?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, it looks like the ayes have it. So I guess, Joe, I am anointing you to write a resolution for us.
Sure. Representative Marler, if you can send that to me, I'll do it right now.
Thank you.
Yep.
Okay. So it looks like we have that under control. Anything else for the good of the committee? Seeing none, I'm going to close House Natural Resources.
Thank you.
You bet. Thank you.
Good idea.